Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, we are going to discuss a bit of news and Comic-Con 2021. We're going to review Ride the Eagle, Old and Snake Eyes, and our topic this week are sidekicks. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, my fellow host, John Davenport.
That's 2 weeks in a row. I'm making it back, man. I might make this a thing. I don't know.
Easy.
This could be good.
The energy is great. I don't know if I can handle it for an hour and a half, but we're gonna go there. Troy Heinrichs is also here.
I am much more interesting. Thank you, John. I appreciate it.
You're absolutely
ouch.
Welcome about that. You know,
it was so good you scared her away. She's not here this week.
She's gotta still apply some of that ointment.
The burn hurt. Amanda Sink will not be here this week, probably because she's still mad at John and John's here. So that's how this works. But that's why we were back up to four, because then we don't have to worry about these things. Problems are solved. No, she doesn't feel good, but hopefully she'll be back next week.
Feel better, Amanda.
Maybe you should apologize.
He said sarcastically.
Maybe what you did last week really did scar her.
What's the point of apologizing if she's not here to accept it?
She will probably... Who's on a podcast and listens to that podcast? Everyone. Except John.
Yeah, I don't even know what I said last week, so...
That's true. I'm surprised Troy does, but he probably went looking just for that one specific moment.
Wait, somebody said something nice about me? Holy shit, that never happens.
I gotta find. How does Aaron know that? Because he knows me well after 8 years.
This is true. Normally, we've had a whole separate episode for Comic-Con. Honestly, that's what we've done every year for many, many years now, since when we attended this press, and then we just followed up with it, because it's always a great convention. Well, this year, not so much. Very little came out of Comic-Con, but there's a few things sprinkled in our news roundup, so we're just going to add it there. Now we're going to talk a little bit about the San Diego Comic-Con in a second. So here's our news roundup. Here's everything that happened over the past week in entertainment. And Dexter, he got his new revival, delivered its first trailer, and it looks just like the old Dexter, but with snow and flannel, and it's called New Blood. Catchy. Likewise, Amazon unveiled its first look at a new series for I Know What You Did Last Summer. Shudder's VHS 94 hopes to revitalize found footage horror, which is something I'm sure we're all dying for. Nope, that's what I thought. Crickets. Netflix's Army of Thieves, the Army of the Dead prequel, which shows how Dieter got so good at safecracking, did release its trailer and announced a fall release. This is kind of interesting news. Robert Kirkman discussed the success of Invincible on Amazon Prime and how he is still hoping to get a live-action feature of the same property done at some point in the near future. Steve Martin and Martin's Short's new series about true crime podcasters who are focused on a serial killer in their building called Only Murders in the Building dropped its first trailer and hits Hulu on August 31st, and I'm so excited for that. Universal is spending $400 million on a new Exorcist trilogy with Ellen Burstyn and Leslie Odom Jr. already attached. I'm not making that up. $400 million, and there's also a deal with Peacock with this package that'll allow it to stream as well. Warner Brothers has vowed to release 10 movies exclusively to HBO Max in 2022. That means, just to clarify, those movies aren't going to theaters. They're going to be exclusively for HBO Max. HBO is still honoring theatrical windows, so anything that goes to a theater will be in a theater for a period of time before it goes to any kind of streaming or home video, just to clarify that. And finally, we are getting another Predator movie called Skull, which will revolve around the first time a Predator comes to Earth.
No Welcome to Earth.
Somebody had to say it. All right. Of all of that, what stood out to you the most? What really got you excited, if anything?
Well, it's really tough out of all of that stuff to really point out what one thing really got me excited, because it all seems a little bit lackluster at the moment. Although Robert Kirkman getting a live action Invincible really jumps out at me, but also so does the I Know What You Did Last Summer series. Like, especially coming out pre-Halloween, it sounds like it's going to be a pretty good time. And it's something that Amazon's been really releasing some great content lately. So I'm interested to see what they do with that property.
Sounds like word vomit right there, but all I heard was that it all was pretty lackluster. Do you mean the presentation, sir, or are you talking specifically about the news itself? Because I
the news
want
itself.
Clarification, because after, you know, recent events, I want to make sure you're not making digs at me now. Like, one by one, you're taking, this is like an Agatha Christie novel, and one by one, you're going to knock us all off.
Didn't I, like, just give you the whole wide-angle compliment?
That was behind the scenes. Now people get to wonder what that
meant. That's what she said.
Troy, what about you? Anything stand out for you?
I mean, I'm interested in the Exorcist concept just because if they're going to greenlight it as a trilogy, it has some potential to actually be done in the vein of like a Lord of the Rings situation where they could film all three things at once and it could actually turn out to be something really, really exciting at the same time. It freaked the crap out of me as a kid, so I do not need to see any more Exorcist, but I like the idea and what they're trying to do in order to revive the property.
Okay, I appreciate what you're saying. I'm not trying to discount what you're saying. I'm just saying strictly dollars. $400 million to invest in a property that hasn't been successful outside of the very first film in the early or in the 70s. I don't understand that. Like, I understand apparently money, Hollywood has money to throw just left and right, just like they're at the strip club, just ding, 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 dollar bills everywhere. On the same token, this feels ripe for one of those Blumhouse productions where it's $5 or $10 million, just like Halloween. I think Blumhouse might be attached. Actually, I think they are attached to this. But why isn't this like a $5 or $10 million property? So it's a $30 million trilogy or $50 million trilogy. I don't understand how you get to $400 million for Exorcist. It's just not making sense to me personally.
Well, probably because we don't know who's attached to it yet.
Yeah, Ellen Burstyn and Leslie Odom Jr. I said that when I was talking, but apparently that was a very like lackluster performance.
That's two people.
That's, you know, Aaron's right. We weren't paying enough attention to him just then. What were we?
Doing things that were fun, John. It's so good to have you back.
We were doing interesting things.
Way more interesting than any of that news.
That money is feels excessive. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, it absolutely is.
It tells you what kind of effects they're going to lay into the movie, which or the movies in general. That's they're saying, okay, well, we have this cast, which so far isn't really anyone jumping out off the screen at us, but we're going to spend $400 million, which means that we're going to do some massively awesome effects, and there's going to be more than just pea soup flying at people. But you're right. The first movie was the only one with real success. However, I think the third one, the one with George C. Scott, is a interesting and fun movie, and I want to see something more like that, what they did with that third one.
I concur.
Whatever they do, I just want it reasonably priced. I know it's not my money, but it just bugs me. It's like, and I almost don't want to watch it just on principle. I mean, that right there, to me, I see $400 million. I'm like, you could give a ton of independent filmmakers a lot of money to make some great films, new properties, original ideas, and you could, and one of them would turn a big profit, or several of them would turn a big profit. It could lead to so many other movies can be revitalized because it just doesn't make sense for you to spend that much money on a 1973 film. There was a series that they had a couple of years ago. It lasted for two seasons, but $400 million on the franchise rights for something that I don't know. I'm going on too long about this. I'm
you really
offended.
Have a lot of feelings about it.
I am
Why don't
offended.
You show us on the doll where the Exorcist hurt you.
There's people starving somewhere or something, and the money would be put to better use. I could get a Ford Fairlane sequel or something. Andrew Dice Clay will work cheap. Why can't that money be put to good use?
Ah! All right. Wait a minute. A Ford Fairlane sequel and money to put to good use is not a sentence I thought I'd ever hear.
Maybe I'll start a GoFundMe. Maybe it's worth a GoFundMe. I think that's there's a chance there. I don't know. But back to Kirkman is the only thing that really excited me, because Robert Kirkman wanting to still take his animated series to a feature, live action feature, that sounds interesting. I don't know if that would ever happen now that it's found success in animated form, but it's possible. TV shows become movies all the time. Just not soon.
M. Night did that and it failed miserably.
Man, you're just angry about old, aren't you?
I'm super angry about old.
Hang on, we'll come back to that. You know what? Let's move on to the Comic-Con question, okay? So this is the question I want to ask, because we have always covered Comic-Con on this show, or at least the better part of a decade. It'll be 10 years by next week, so congratulations to the Hollywood Outsider,
you?
I guess. Yeah, me. I'll take it.
So, none of us were here 10 years ago, so it is only Aaron.
That's true. When it comes to Comic-Con 2021... And, you know, I realize that we've had to do this Comic-Con at home thing for the last couple of years, but last year they did pretty well for a last minute effort. I mean, they really had to put it together kind of last minute because they were hoping to have their usual San Diego Comic-Con. And if you don't know what it is, please go listen to past episodes because we've covered it ad nauseum. I've attended the San Diego Comic-Con. It is a fantastic event full of geeks and nerds and people that love to just dress up and get in line. That's really what you do when you're there. On the same token, now we've got these at-home events, and last year there was still buzz about some of the stuff that happened, but this year, when all the panels were done, nobody was talking about anything. Now, it should be worth mentioning there are other big Comic-Cons. New York Comic-Con is huge, so there are other Comic-Cons. You know, this isn't the only one, but this has been the staple for a long time. I wonder if its glory is over.
Well, I think the glory only came because of Hall H. And if Hall H doesn't exist, like, then what is there about Comic-Con other than what it was traditionally, which was comic books and artists and people sharing their craft? And I think in the age of COVID, where we've been able to have the same question from the gaming world, right, with the E3 Expo, if you don't have video game enthusiasts coming to play video games at a convention center, then what's the point of E3? I'm Nintendo. I can publish all my own stuff on YouTube. I'm Sony. I can do the same thing, publish all my own stuff on YouTube. I don't need the convention to get my message out there. I think we're seeing that same thing now with the streaming services, where if I have a platform on Disney Plus, I can just put up the entire D23 Expo reel on Disney Plus, and I don't have to have the convention and the cost that goes with it.
I mean, I'm on the side of it may be still a little bit too soon to tell as to what's going to be happening with San Diego Comic-Con and New York Comic-Con and conventions in general. It's still a little too soon. We're all still just kind of like recovering from the awesome year that was 2020, and so far what 2021's brought us. So I don't know. As much as I would like to say one way or the other, I'm just going to say it's really just too soon to tell. If we can get back to a more normal way of life, then there's a huge chance that we'll see Comic-Con become a big staple for news outlets again, and or not. Like Troy was saying, it's I guess I'm just not going to take a side on either side of this, am I? I'm just going to like ride the middle.
I was just waiting for a PSA or something. I thought you were going to be like, if you want to get back to convention status, here's what you got to do, kids. That's what I was waiting for.
Well, this year might have been challenging too, because when you think about last year, everybody knew it wasn't going to happen. So you immediately went into, this is how we're going to plan to do the event. And you can execute that plan flawlessly because you had the runway. Mm-hmm. This year, it was like, well, restrictions might be lifted in June. They might be lifted in July. I'm not quite sure. Do we plan for an on-site? Do we not plan for an on-site? So I think they had to maybe backpedal a little bit this year. And that's why we got kind of the lackluster performance of slate of information that we did get out of it.
Right.
I totally forgot it was even going on.
Well, and I also wonder, like, sincerely, conventions really, really prosper and thrive on the idea that it's breaking news that those guys are going to get. Like, a lot of what Hall H delivers is big, huge breaking news in the geek world, right? That said, you know, over the past 10 years that we've been doing this podcast, that has steadily completely changed because the environment, all that breaking news is out every second of every day on the internet. They don't need to go and wait in line to Hall H because they'll find out 57 seconds after it's announced anyway. Like, there's no real tangible reason to wait in that line other than I want to see my favorite star. You know, I can always justify film festivals because you're going to see those movies there and you won't see them anywhere else. And, you know, you might see reviews pop up, but you won't see them. So there's a reason to go. At the convention, other than seeing the actors, everything else will be on the internet in 15 minutes. You know what I mean? And I think that really does pull a little bit from the pizzazz and the pop that these conventions have always had. And this has kind of shown that because the internet has taken over how those ideas are distributed.
Fair point.
Yeah, absolutely. It's even if they do take every step they possibly can to keep it from going on the internet, there's always a chance that somebody's going to figure out a glasses camera that records whatever they want they're looking at, so they can put it on the internet 5 seconds later. So it is something that's been a big problem. So I can see them doing more things where they are in more control of the environment, so that they can announce things on a bigger scale on their own without this whole. I can see it. We'll see, though.
We will see. And remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group. We're on Twitter at @buypopcorn. And next week is our 10th anniversary episode. Every living host will be gathering to play some games and have a bit of fun. We're going to have an anniversary episode. We're not going to do it like we've done many, many times in the past where we just, you know, reminisce and whatnot. We're just going to play some games. We're going to have fun. So hopefully you guys will have come back for that one. That will be a enjoyable.
Getting crunk, y'all.
Episode. That means Brian's coming back. Scott's coming back. Troy's going to be here. John's going to be here. Amanda's going to be here, unless she's still mad about last week. All right. Patreon supporters, our show's independently funded. Therefore, all the expenses are paid from our own pockets. We got a brand new episode of our Patreon exclusive podcast called Bad Movie Night, where we talked about Point Break and its 30th anniversary and how Johnny Utah is the worst FBI agent in the history of film. History of film. It's a very important topic. You can support the Hollywood Outsider and listen to that hilarity if you go to patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. And a special shout out to Josh Davis. He's a new Patreon supporter. Josh, thank you so much for joining the hoe. And I hope you are enjoying all the nonsense content that is available to you now. Okay. Now we've got some spoiler-free reviews. We're going to start with the one that makes Troy the maddest. And that's Old. And if you go to the website, thehollywoodoutsider.com, you can find reviews for Old, Snake Eyes, and Ride the Eagle. They're all there. But we're going to just talk about them right now. Old is based on the graphic novel Sandcastle. It's about a beautiful resort, which offers several families the promise of a trip to a secluded beach that the other visitors only wish they could access. We've all been there, right? You go to a resort and you're like, I want to go to the beach where nobody's at. This is that beach. Only it sucks. Once they realize that they are going to age rapidly every minute they spend at this beach, so quickly that they will only live for less than a day, they become desperate to solve the mystery and find a way out of here or die trying. Now, this is written and directed by M. Night Shyamalan, which I think we've all discussed many times on this podcast, is very hit or miss. But Troy, I got to say, I mean, we both saw this, and in your written review, you did not mince words. Fair enough. But you know, starting with the screenplay and the story, I think we can agree that whatever his faults, M. Night is always trying to do something original. Would you agree with that?
I would think that's true. I think that in this particular movie, it was a great concept that he was trying to get across. And I really liked the philosophical thought that it gave me at the end of the movie. Like, would I be this way if I had this exact same scenario put in front of me? But at the same time, it was just like, the pieces just didn't fit together the right way, I think, is what it was. Like, I almost wish, instead of relying on the big mystery reveal at the end, because that's what we're all waiting for, where the whole movie, we're just like, what's the big twist? What's the big twist? What's the big twist? I just almost would have rather just be a pretty straightforward movie. And then You would just, I think that would have worked for this story in particular. I think that would have worked better just to have more interaction between guests back at the resort versus the guests on the beach. And then having the twist kind of interplay between the two of those things, I think that would have made it much more interesting and much more believable.
So what do you think of the whole idea, the concept, the screenplay here, where these people are kind of brought down to this beach? There's more than just a family. There's a gaggle of them, if you will. And they all have different issues. And they're on this beach. And as soon as they get there, they start aging. And they can't stop it. You know, and they're all varying ages. You know, kids turn into teenagers, turn into 20-year-olds. You have, you know, if you've seen the trailer, I would say it tells you too much. You probably know way too much about the movie. I would recommend you don't watch it.
1 hour and 30 minutes of that 1 hour and 40 minute movie.
Yeah, it tells you a lot, which is too bad. But on the same token, I don't think it really ruined anything for me either. Because once you know that they're going to age on the beach, most of the stuff you would kind of assume. But there's also a lot of hostilities, there's anger, there's a lot of emotional turmoil going on at the same time. What didn't you like about this? Because I know by your review, you did not like this movie, especially the script and the acting. We'll get to the acting, but just the script.
Yeah, it was just the words. The words were just so weird, and how, like, you had the family unit was talking to each other, and just the dialogue between them, it felt very broken. I think I said in the review, it felt like Tommy Wiseau wrote the thing. And I know that the family, especially the mom and the dad, are of a foreign descent as their characters are laid out. Mm-hmm. So they have an accent, and it might be an accent thing, but just the way that the dialogue was delivered, it was just like, is it written that way? Or are these just really bad actors? I couldn't really tell.
Are the inflections obscured because of the accents?
Yeah, it could exactly what it could have been. But even when you get to the dialogue amongst the kids, as the kids age, they don't stay 6 years old, like, or 8 years old or whatever they were when they were starting out. Like, they talk like they're teenagers and they talk like they're an adult. as it moves. So they shift in and out of this experience where it's like, if they talked like a 6-year-old the entire movie, it would have been way more believable. But unfortunately, they didn't talk or act like a 6-year-old by the end of the movie.
I was really into it for the first half. Like the first half, I thought, I don't know what Troy's talking about, because I read the review before I went. I'm enjoying this. Like this is kind of captivating. I do think the dialogue's a little clunky. But then you get to such extreme measures in terms of what is going on. I mean, there's one character, I will not say who or why, but one character acts very erratically and nobody seems to really want to address it immediately. And to me, that is such a huge problem with the script, because it kind of like alludes to everything else that's wrong with it. The things that should be paid attention to don't seem to be being paid attention to. It never seems to me like they're really focusing hard on the actual problem to solve. It's just more like, we just gotta, what do we do? We're aging. And then like, oh, this happens and that happens and this happens because of accelerated aging, instead of, how do we stop this? Let's figure this out. You know what I mean? I mean, I just feel like certain characters don't address real issues and like normal people would.
Yeah, because there's certain things in this movie where it would be a cool concept if you really didn't know what was going on, because there's one point in the movie where this particular character that Aaron's talking about, he does something and you don't know what the motivation is behind it. And because of that, it's like, it could be a really cool thing or it could be a really dumb thing, because it's just not, it doesn't set it up enough to make you go, it's a cool thing. And then you're like, get the wool pulled over your eyes later on. You almost can see it from the get go. And it's almost like, you know, Aaron and I talk about it a lot, like the writing is showing. I mean, this whole movie felt like every 10 minutes I was looking at my watch going like, oh my gosh, it's only been 10 minutes. Because of that exact thing, you can literally see where the beats were the entire time. And then when it was literally the beat was the trailer moment, it was like, oh my God, really? Like there's nothing new here.
And I was so angry that they actually named a rapper Midsize Sedan, as if that's a hip name that anyone would ever use. It's just like, what? Do you not know any rappers? Do you not listen to any rap music? Because that's ridiculous. Ah, anyway.
And for like the first like 20 minutes that everybody's on the beach, that he's just sitting in the background doing nothing.
And no one even says, what's that guy doing?
Yeah. Who's that dude?
Yeah. It's odd. Some of the writing is definitely odd. The performances, I mean, nobody really stood out as exceptional and nobody really stood out as very good. Like I hate to say that because it could be just the writing, but the performances I felt were very weak and it really was distracting in many ways. And Rufus Sewell is in the movie, and we've talked about this before. I don't know what it is, but he's a guy who shows up, and when he shows up, I'm like, well, there goes that movie. There goes that series. And sure enough, that just happened.
But the Man in the High Castle was amazing.
I guess, you know, everybody
until the very last episode. The very last episode of Man in the High Castle was stupid. But the episode right before that, Rufus is freaking like on fire. So when Rufus showed up, I was like, oh, this is going to be decent. And then
he's really so good. But for whatever reason,
he picks the wrong things.
Bad things.
Yes. Yeah, right. He's got a lot of bad baggage. So what did you think about the performances? Did anybody stand out to you as exceptional or anything? Because I did keep waiting for, because I don't think there's bad actors here. I really just think it's an issue of the writing. Alex Wolff, he's in Jumanji. He's done very good things. Vicky Krieps has done good things. Gael Garcia Bernal, he's a very good actor. Like these are decent actors who are just, I really feel like suffering from the writing. Everything feels so exaggerated in so many ways.
Yeah, I mean, Patricia was the only one that seemed believable. But then even though that she's suffers from seizures, like even when she's doing her seizures, it felt overacted. So, yeah, it's really hard to say. Like, I think the only person that was a really decent actor, I thought, was the resort manager. I thought he gave the nice creepiness vibe and like, oh, there's something wrong about this place. Like, what's going on with this place? I got his vibe right away from the minute he greeted the family at the car drop off. So I think that if there was anybody that was like great in their role as it was written, it would have been him. But I thought Patricia did pretty good as well.
Yeah, Nikki Amuka-Bird was her name. It's weird to say her seizure acting was fantastic, but it was extremely convincing. I mean, it was very terrifying, honestly, to watch her do that.
Especially when she's doing the multiples.
Yes.
Because of the time passing, which I thought was
no spoilers.
Cool. It's not a spoiler. It's in the trailer.
All right. So what did work for you? We talked about what didn't work. Something had to work for you. What worked for you?
Yeah, I really like the concept of how M. Night used the camera work in some aspects. There were some aspects where he chose not to do any cuts or fades or dissolves. He like takes the camera, pans it out to sea, and then pans it back in to like show the passage of time. Mm-hmm. Like that was freaking annoying to me. Like, I don't understand why you're choosing that method.
I think it was to show how fast they were aging, right?
It could be.
Yeah.
But it was just like, the pan was like 3 seconds. And then the pan comes back and it's like, you could have filled that 3 seconds with something interesting, you know, or at least pan it up to the top of the slope or tell us what's going on in the outskirts of the beach or something, mm-hmm. or cut back to the resort if you wanted to. Then I really liked what they did with the camera work, though, as far as showcasing points of view from the characters' perspectives. So, you know, at one point, as mentioned in the review, they use this focus on the camera to simulate blindness happening in one of the characters. And I mm-hmm. thought that was a really cool technique.
It was clever.
And then another way, they used the sound design specifically. So that way, when someone started to have hearing loss, you would hear, especially because we saw it in AMC Prime in Atmos, and you just hear that no noise from the left side of the theater and all the noise on the right side of the theater. I thought that was a really amazing effect and really brought you into what that character was feeling in that moment. I think in those moments, the acting was actually really great. The minute they open up their mouth, though, it was like, oh, my God, just shut up.
Damn. Ouch. Ouch. I would agree. I think the production, in terms of visual representation and sound design, was fabulous. Like, really, it's the best part of the movie. And there are a lot of beautiful shots, kind of like homages and nods to Spielberg and Hitchcock and many other filmmakers, as well as, obviously, Shyamalan's own style. But I really, really dug how everything looked. I disagree with Troy, and I like those pans. I just find that interesting because to me, it's like, oh, what's going to happen when the camera gets back? Because he did it more than a few times. So
more than a few times.
Every time he does it, but I can see why that would annoy some people because it was done probably too much. But I did enjoy it. I enjoyed that part of it, not the movie. So if $10 is full price of admission, what do you give Old?
It's grown on me. I might have gone up from $4 to $4.50. But it's not a five. I can't do it.
Yeah, I explained it as it's like aging in real life. It starts out awesome, and then very quickly you realize it sucks. So I personally give it about a 3.50.
I literally was waiting for someone to be like, hi, doggy.
Oh, hi, Mock. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't think it's that bad, but it is kind of frustrating, and the ending... The twist, if that's what you want to call it, I don't really think it's a twist, but I guess it is in many degrees. It was interesting. It was interesting, but it didn't work.
Didn't work.
Half of that reveal doesn't work.
If that reveal would have been happening as they went along, I think it would have been a much more interesting movie.
I agree. 100%. I agree. Okay, let's move on to something else, like Snake Eyes, which kind of sparks our topic of sidekicks this week.
Well, we grew up with G.I. Joe, and Snake Eyes was always badass back in the 80s. So the real question, Aaron, is did we actually need an origin story in the first place?
No. Next question. No. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love G.I. Joe. I grew up with him. You know, I Yo Joe, and I think there's even a lame Yo Joe joke in here. I just don't want to touch that. But
yeah. And now you know. And knowing is half the battle.
They very much had a backstory to the character, and this is basically a reinvention of it. Now, I think... What I do like is that they took a character who was a blonde haired, blue eyed guy and they made him an Asian man in this film. And I think that was a good change. I think because really it doesn't matter what race Snake Eyes is. And they integrated a ton of Asian culture into the film. I like that a lot. I thought that was very interesting. The problem I have is I don't find Henry Golding that great of an actor. And I don't think he has to be a great actor, but you got to carry the film. And in terms of Snake Eyes, a character I really wanted to see the origin story for because I love Snake Eyes. He was just very cool. Well, I mean, none of this is really Snake Eyes. None of it. He's a chatty Cathy for the entire movie. Snake Eyes didn't talk. he is much more of a rabble rouser. He's fisticuffs and that sort of thing. I mean, he does some sword play as the movie goes, but he's never what I would consider a ninja. He's a ninja in the cartoon. So basically everything with the origin is just like, you know, they have plenty of nods to G.I. Joe and other characters and stuff, but it never really feels like Snake Eyes to me until he puts a helmet on, which everybody's seen in the trailer. And you're like, oh, well, I guess that means he's Snake Eyes. Well, he's still not a very good ninja. The other guy is so much better at everything. That's my long-winded answer to that question.
Is that other guy Storm Shadow?
I mean, maybe. I would say it's a spoiler, but they put it in the marketing everywhere. So essentially he becomes Storm Shadow. Yes. Andrew Koji, he plays Tommy. He's fantastic. Great. I'm just, you know what, Troy, you don't even need to talk. I'm just going to run through it. He does fantastic acting. He is captivating. He is a ninja. He is a master swordsman. He can beat the snot out of anyone. And there's never a moment where I doubted his martial arts skills. Whenever Henry Golding's fighting, I'm like, shouldn't you get to that Crazy Rich Asian sequel? Because this is, he just never convinced me he was a ninja. He wasn't bad. He was never bad. He was just fine.
Does the action work, though? I mean, was it at least enjoyable if you're not coming into it knowing anything about G.I. Joe?
This is one of those movies, if they still had cable, right? This is one of those movies where if you're flipping channels, you would stick on it and you would probably watch it to the end. Because the action is engaging. It's interesting. It's not memorable. There's no memorable set pieces. There's no one portion of the movie where you're like, man, that was kick ass. It's all fun enough to watch.
Would you think that, because there were G.I. Joe movies specifically, mm-hmm. do you think that this could fit into those G.I. Joe movies? Does it fit into the cartoon, or is this a completely reboot, new universe kind of launching point for what could be G.I. Joe of the future?
I think it's a reboot, and you know, I kind of wish it was a bigger hit so it could have led to more things. I mean, you've got Samara Weaving as Scarlet, and she obviously is very talented. And they don't give her hardly anything to do. Sorry, John. You'd be very disappointed. Mm-hmm. She's got like 5 minutes of screen time. But, you know.
Well, that's not worth it.
Well, I mean, she's still pretty good when she's there.
Yeah, but it's only 5 minutes.
It's true. It's more. This is a reboot.
Need a lot longer than that.
This is a soft reboot. You're so 12. This is a soft reboot. This is very much about reinventing the franchise, kind of going you through the origins to lead into more movies. And I don't think it did well enough. This might be the last G.I. Joe movie you see for a long time.
If they did make another one, which character would you want to see next?
Scarlet with Samara Weaving.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Or actually, or Storm Shadow, because he's freaking great. He's the best thing about the Snake Eyes movie. Should have called it Storm Shadow.
Could it be both of them together in the same movie? Would that work?
As long as Snake Eyes didn't have to do anything.
Just rip him out all together.
He's not bad. I find him to be a very handsome man. He's very charming. Every time I see him act, I feel like he's acting. You know what I mean? He's one of those actors where I can see him acting.
Well, he's a rom-com label too versus an action hero. And that's part of the issue. You can't see him as an action hero because he's in such rom-com stuff.
But Andrew Koji is so much better as Tommy. He's just, I mean, he's basically the clan leader's son, and he's trying to lead their clan into the new age. And he takes Snake Eyes under his wing. And it's important to point out that this also has that thing that Solo had where a character is named absolutely ridiculously because when he's a child, his father is killed in front of him. It's very sad. And the way that he was killed, it was because the mobster guy determined that he would die because of what he rolled. And he rolled a, wait for it, Snake Eyes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's almost worse than Solo.
Oh, that's pretty bad.
Just saying.
So if $10 was a full price of admission, what would you give Snake Eyes there, Mr. Aaron Peterson?
$5. Like I said, you know, you don't have cable, but if you got streaming and you're flipping around, it's worth a watch. But I wouldn't, I'd go to a matinee. But if, you know, you got 6 kids and they all love G.I. Joe, wait for video.
You know, do you guys know the actual story behind how the character of Snake Eyes was created?
Created or the character's backstory? I know he was from Vietnam and all that stuff, if that's what you mean. But
No, the actual why they created the toy for Snake Eyes.
No, go for it.
All right. So back when they were initially printing the G.I. Joe toys, they were like, okay, well, we've got, I forget what the number is, but we got such and such many good guys and such many bad guys. We're going to need at least one more good guy, but we've already blown through our money, so we can't print another good guy that will cost us a lot of money. Okay, why don't we just make him all black and just throw on a bunch of garbage onto one character, and then we'll fix it if this takes off or not. And that's how Snake Eyes was created.
Worked. He was my favorite character from G.I. Joe. And fun fact, this is what people don't, when I said he's a Chatty Cathy, if you didn't watch G.I. Joe, Snake Eyes didn't talk ever. He's a silent assassin. And he talks throughout here. Now, granted, origin story, and I know, you know, the real Snake Eyes, you got his vocal cords severed and all that stuff, but none of that happens in this movie, so I'm not spoiling anything. So I guess they're reinventing him. This time he just, it's a choice. It's everything in 2021. It's whatever you choose, man. Just choose your best life. And that's what he's doing. Snake Eyes like, I choose to talk.
A lot.
A lot. But Henry Golding, handsome fella. I think he's going to do just fine in the movies.
All right. So, Aaron, you checked out Ride the Eagle, which is on VOD on Friday. Leif is left with a conditional inheritance when his estranged mother, Leif. Honey, dies.
It's Leif.
I've always seen that pronounced as Leif.
No, it's Leif, though.
All right. Fine. I'll do it your way, then. We'll leave this whole little exchange in the show. Leif is left with a conditional inheritance.
His mom's a hippie, dude. It's Leif. That's all I'm saying. Like, that's all I'm saying. I'm explaining to you. Name's Leif. That's all. Hippie.
Okay.
I saw the movie, John. I'm just letting you know that I watched it, and his name is okay. Leif.
Fine.
God.
Let me get through this thing from Amanda that she sent me, okay? Okay. So we can move it along.
All right. Fine.
He's going to dick punch you in that one right. Came away.
For the 15th and final time, Leif is left with a conditional inheritance when his estranged mother, Honey, dies. I guess she is a hippie. Her name is Honey. Before he can move into her picturesque Yosemite cabin, he has to complete her elaborate and sometimes dubious to-do list. This stars J.K. Simmons, Jake Johnson, Susan Sarandon. Aaron, Jake Johnson is no stranger to playing like the man child. You know, it's what he kind of became famous for from The New Girl, and he's kind of leaned into it pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Is that essentially like his entire path through this, or is it more to it than that?
No, I mean, essentially, Trent O'Donnell, who's directors, I worked on New Girl with him. So it's very much in that vein of comedy drama, but I didn't watch that show, so I can't speak to how close it adheres to it. What I can tell you, Jake Johnson is just one of those actors I enjoy watching. I think he's, I don't know if I wouldn't go so much to say charming. He's just, he's got a subtle brand of comedy that is almost sardonic, sarcastic, but also genuine. Does that make sense?
I mean, absolutely.
Yeah. He's got like his kind of his own brand of humor. And some of it, I would actually like him and Sudeikis can really have similar kinds of comedy at certain times. And it's very laid back. It's very kind of lackadaisical, but it always makes me laugh. And he is a very charming guy in this movie. Huh? I said it even though I said I wasn't going to say it. Damn it. But he's going through some struggles. He's going through this time in his life when he doesn't know what he wants to do. He's trying to be in a band, but he's too old to be in a band. And everybody that's in the band knows he's too old to be in the band. He's basically sponging off friends. And his mom passes away. Didn't really talk to her. She lives in this fantastic cabin in Yosemite. And so he goes there because she requires him to do this list of things that she uses as a teaching tool for all the lessons she never shared with him. Like all the things she wanted to teach him that she never did. She's using this requirement, this death requirement, this guilt obligation to get him to come to this cabin and do these things. And so she leaves these little tapes that he has to follow. And it's really an interesting story because it's kind of, it's unique. It's a very unique mother-son tale where the mother and son never actually come face to face. And he's very good in it.
All right. So like I mentioned before, we have the cast, we have J.K. Simmons and Susan Sarandon, who are both acting powerhouses. Mm-hmm. J.K. Simmons is an actual powerhouse. He's hitting the gym harder than anybody I've ever seen recently.
JK stands for jacked.
So how much screen time do they get in comparison to the Jake Johnson? Is it enough or would you like to see more of them?
No, I mean, it's really Jake Johnson's movie. I mean, he's on screen almost every frame. I think every frame, actually. I think he's, except for when he's talking to an old girlfriend, which is one of the things his mom requires him to do. And, you know, you'll cut back and forth to her, but he's part of every scene. Susan Sarandon is only there through the videotapes. She's his mom, and through those tapes where she's telling him the things he has to do and also kind of injecting her personal philosophies and her life into him, since he would never listen to her when she was here because he just never forgave her for the life that she led and kind of leaving him as a kid. And J.K. Simmons is Susan Sarandon's old boyfriend, essentially, who is very angry through a lot of the movie because he doesn't know that that's her son and or anything else. And so it's very he's great. I don't want to say too much about what his character does because it's kind of a nerve. It's very uncomfortable in certain spots. Like there's moments where I'm like, is J.K. Simmons going to kill somebody? Like I didn't know where that character was going to go. And it ends up being very, very absurd, but also hysterical. He's great.
All right, that sounds awesome. You know, as far as this whole list of to-do things that that Jake Johnson has to do, like, are they played for laughs? Or do they make sense? Or is it just out of this world?
No, it's all very, very reasonable and realistic and human. I mean, it's things like get in a boat and paddle across the water, you know, just to kind of be one with yourself. Take a trip. Or take a hike through this trail to this very remote location to see this spot that was my favorite spot. So you can see why I loved it, that kind of thing. And it's just little things like that to basically, so he gets out of his own head and starts to embrace life again. And maybe sees why she did the things she did or why she is the person she is. And maybe he can see her in a different light. I think it's really beautiful, but I'm a sucker for mother-son stuff too. So.
All right. So if $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give Ride the Eagle?
I give it $6.50. I think it has an unfortunate title probably. And if you see the cover art, it really doesn't look great when you look at it, but it really makes sense once you see the movie. So it does fit completely. So don't be, it's a weird thing to say, but don't be discouraged by the cover art. It's like Serenity. Remember their cover art? I was like, oh, that's not great. And the movie's great. So it's a better movie than the cover art. Is that a review? I'm going to say it is.
All right. That works for me.
Okay.
Don't judge a movie by its cover.
Bam. You, my friend, that right there.
Ah, I made it up right then.
Yeah, it's new. I have never heard that before in my life. But what people have heard of all summer is A Quiet Place Part 2, because that took people by storm. Hailed by critics and audiences around the world, the biggest thriller of the summer, A Quiet Place Part 2, is now available on 4K, Ultra HD, Blu-ray, and digital. Following the deadly events at home, the Abbott family must now face terrors of the outside world as they continue their fight for survival in silence. Starring Emily Blunt, Cillian Murphy, Jamun Hansu, the terrifying suspenseful thriller A Quiet Place Part 2 comes with exclusive bonus content featuring director John Krasinski, who takes viewers deeper into the world of A Quiet Place. Also, you can experience the whole Abbott family saga with a 2-movie collection available exclusively on Blu-ray and digital. It's rated PG-13 from Paramount Pictures. Now, we reviewed this movie back in May. We all loved it. We all raved about it. It's a rare sequel that not only matches the original, but I would say takes you on a completely different journey as well. And because we love this movie so much, and thanks to Paramount Pictures, we are giving away 5 physical copies of A Quiet Place Part 2 to 5 lucky listeners. So if you want a chance to win your copy, email us contests@thehollywoodoutsider.com. That's contests@thehollywoodoutsider.com with the subject line shh in that email. Tell us your name and who your favorite sidekick is before August 3rd, and you'll be entered to win. Keep in mind, you must live in the U.S., sorry, because it's got to be through the mail. But be sure to watch A Quiet Place Part 2 either way. All right, now let's go to our From the Outside In topic. Sidekicks. We're finally on the topic, sidekicks. Now, some people are better in small doses. So when should a sidekick qualify for their own film? We're talking about this because Snake Eyes just got their own film. We're constantly looking to create new franchises and spinoffs and everything else where everybody gets their own movie. When do they actually need one?
For me, I think the time a sidekick actually needs their own story is when they they compete very well with the actual main character of a story, and almost to the point where it's a blending of like these two characters, where it gets really hard to know who really is the star of the movie, with the exception of like the amount of screen time somebody gets. Sidekicks are just that just take the movie and elevate it with their presence are the ones who need their own movie the most.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's well said. I think that it's really a matter of taking the essence of what they bring to the original movie, but if you could take that essence and bottle it and put it into something that could be its own story or an even expanded story, then it makes it super, super easy to go. I don't know if I'd want to see something like a Pinky in the Brain, where Pinky gets you know, just literally Pinky like the entire time. But I think Pinky is such an interesting character that you could craft an entire story around Pinky as well. So it's a matter of, do we want the sidekick to be the main character, or do we just want the sidekick to have its own movie? I think both of those could be very interesting concepts.
See, I think like when you have a character that you care more about than a lead, that's when they deserve their own movie. You know, when they're more fascinating, when you watch like Guardians of the Galaxy, you like Star-Lord, but don't you really watch it for Rocket and Groot? I mean, that's really who the characters you prefer. I would watch a Rocket movie tomorrow, much quicker 100%. Than I would a Star-Lord movie.
Yondu.
Did you say no?
No, Yondu.
I said Yondu.
Oh, Yondu.
Yondu and Rocket together.
I would watch that. That sounds great. That sounds great. Yeah. Two spinoff characters right there. Bam. Make that, Marvel. I was really trying to think about this. Like, a lot of things that I love because of the sidekick. Star Trek, Shatner's fine, but I don't watch it for Shatner. I watch it because Spock is so interesting and fascinating. And it's because he captivates my interest. Shatner is like basically a by the numbers lead. I mean, he's just so cardboard. Interesting, sure. And you got to love how his deliveries are sometimes. And the fact that he just constantly, you know, tagging green ladies or whatever, but I like Spock. Spock was far more interesting to me.
With Spock and Bones were much more interesting combined, and they actually played off of Shatner the best. And I think it was either the Undiscovered Country where they were camping at night, or it was the one before that where they're camping at night in Yosemite somewhere. And you got the three of them kind of like sitting by a fire, and just the way those three characters interacted, you can almost immediately take Shatner out of it and enjoy watching Bones and Spock bounce off each other.
I mean, even inanimate
aluminium.
Aluminium. Even I want to totally mess it up now because you said that. I want to talk about actually aluminium people in inanimate objects like robots.
There you go.
Because K2SO was actually one of the best sidekicks in the Star Wars saga. K2SO is probably like my favorite droid in the entire sequence of events that happened in what they've actually done with the reboot since Kathleen Kennedy came on board. Like, I would watch a K2SO movie all by itself.
Yeah, I would too. I actually have him on my list of characters who need their own movie, and K2SO was so great that just to watch him become the character he is would be just hysterical. Like, they took all the best parts of C-3PO, cut out all the garbage of C-3PO, and added all the best parts of R2-D2, and you have K2SO, and it's so much fun.
And you like cry when he actually dies.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh man, really? That's so sad.
Because he does it in such a fantastic and giving way. And it's like, he's an android. All right.
But is he an android?
I really feel like they don't appreciate it when people have quality sidekicks in a movie or a TV show. You know, I was thinking about when I was a kid, I used to watch Andy Griffith with my grandpa. And he's like, I love Andy Griffith. You know, you just love the Andy Griffith show. I don't remember ever wanting to watch it because of Andy Griffith, though. It was always Barney Fife. Right? Mm-hmm. It was always Barney Fife. That's the guy I wanted to tune into every time because he was funny and he did all the things and he was weird and wacky and he's an odd character. Andy Griffith, I was just like, God, when's he off frame so I can see Barney again? You know, I mean, that's really how it played for me.
I'm feeling like that about, I've been doing my rewatch of Night Court, and I'm feeling that way when it comes to Dan Fielding and the Bull Shannon. Like, those two characters are so much more fun than Harry Stone ever was. Harry Stone was great, and he was a lot of the heart of the show, but if without Dan Fielding and Bull Shannon, the show would be lost on me.
I agree with that 100%. I really feel like Dan Fielding made Night Court. Well, he did. He won all the Emmys. I mean, he won so many Emmys, he had to take himself out of consideration so other people could win. That's the true story.
But was he a sidekick or was he a supporting character?
You're right. But I was just going with it because Dan Fielding is my favorite character. So he's not really a sidekick, but it works for me. I like it. I guess he is more of a supporting character, but you know, whatever, Troy.
I had a problem. Bull Shannon's a sidekick.
Sure, he's more of a sidekick.
I had a total thing that would go with that same conversation. I was like, nope, that's not a sidekick. That's a supporting character.
All right. Well, how about Lord of the Rings? Would you call Samwise a sidekick?
Yes.
Yes.
Now, do you think he would deserve his own movie? Do you find him more interesting than Frodo?
No, because of the last 10 minutes they tacked on. No. If they wouldn't have tacked on that last 10 minutes, then yeah, maybe I would have.
But seriously, like the whole journey, I mean, wasn't he more of the heart? Wasn't he more like we were more invested with what he was doing because he felt like the character we could most relate to? I mean, Frodo, at times, don't get me wrong, Elijah Wood did a fantastic job not knocking the acting. In terms of the characters, if I were to see a spinoff, I would be much more interested in a Samwise movie than I would be a Frodo movie.
I think by the time you get to the third movie in Return of the King, absolutely. I don't think you could say that the same way just based on Fellowship.
Fair. That's fair. Because his journey is the culmination of all three films.
Right.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, it's almost more his story than it is Frodo's story anyways, because of the hero he grows into.
Don't you justify that damn extra 10 minutes, John. I'll come there and I'll find you and I'll gut you.
It's like 15 or 20 minutes is what it is.
I don't know. My bladder doesn't know how to tell time at that point.
There's just a little more left for you, Samwise Gamgee. You're my hero.
I even forgot about the scene. I just was talking about it in general, but you're getting angry about it.
It should have ended when the ship went into the thing. And Aaron will say right. It should have ended 20 minutes before that even.
When they bow, that's the end. Every time.
So here's an interesting question. What about Short Round from Indiana Jones? Do you think he is an interesting sidekick?
Is it great?
He's the one I put on my list for its own movie because you could totally do a Short Round movie with his own entourage doing some kind of wacky crap. Mm-hmm. And then the last 2 minutes, Indy shows up.
You don't need Indy in it because we know who he is. He's a creep, which is always fascinating about that character because, okay, and I know it's your idea, Troy, but I just got to say this, okay? And I think there was some internet scuttlebutt about this recently, but in today's era, it might be seen as creepy that Indiana Jones is dragging this little boy around with him everywhere. And, you know, he doesn't seem to have any parents and, you know, none of that's ever explained. On the same token, I didn't care because it was a fabulous relationship between the two of them. They were almost like father and son or maybe even brothers. And the whole time he's almost more daring than Indy. He saves Indy. He really saves all those children in the mine because if it wasn't for him, Indy wouldn't have come too. And da da da. Flashbacks to the Raiders argument on Big Bang Theory. So yeah. I think Short Round's a very important character. And I still to this day am mad that he didn't come back in Crystal Skull and he doesn't seem like he's going to come back in the new Indy movie. You could easily do a spinoff. Here you go, Henry Golding. There you go. Play Short Round. Do that. I would love to see a Short Round movie. I think that's a fantastic idea because he's a great sidekick and also could be a great leading man.
Why don't you just get the original Short Round to play Short Round?
Well, he's like a math teacher or something now.
You know, speaking of, and I'm sorry I stole all your thunder, what would you do with a Short Round movie, by the way?
Oh, I would just do a Short Round movie. Just have Short Round and whatever posse he has, wherever he's at in the world, and just do the same Indy. Like, Indy 5 could have just been Short Round. Like, instead of Indy being the one that's doing all the stuff, just pass it to Short Round, and Short Round becomes Indiana Jones. I think that would have been a fun transition.
I'm thinking of, like, a Goonies-esque in the 1940s and 1950s kind of story, only instead of making up a treasure, they're going and he's actually doing real treasure hunting as Short Round. So I like the idea where he's got a gang of other people that he's working with, but he's taken, but mixing that with taking what he must have learned from working with Indy and using that as, okay, Indy says I have to go here to look into this whole burial ground or whatever. Come on, guys, let's go do this. And then it becomes something.
See, I don't want Indy. I wouldn't want Indy involved at all. I would really just say he's off on his own adventure. He's learned enough from Indy. You know, he can speak of him so people, you know, get that connection or whatever, but he goes off on his own adventure. He's trying to find his own artifact. He does his own thing. You don't need Indiana Jones there in any way, shape, or form.
I think you'd have to, because the character's been gone for so long, you need some kind of establishing shot, whether it's like a phone call to Indy and saying like, hey, good to hear from you, old friend, or whatever, some joke that he said from Temple of Doom, or a letter, or
something.
But you have to have some presence of indie to establish it, and then you'd be off and running for the rest of the picture.
Yeah, you wouldn't need it again. You wouldn't need it again. Because
no.
People will remember Short Round pretty quick. And Kei-Han Kwan, if he's free, great. If not, find another actor. I mean, it just feels like I didn't think of him because he's a little older. So I don't think Harrison Ford should necessarily be doing it either.
I was going to say, because that's going to stop somebody at this point from an indie movie.
Yeah. All right. So speaking of their own movies, are there any other sidekicks you personally really want to see get their own movie? John, Troy already went. I stole most of his thunder, but you can go anyway.
One that popped in my mind, and this comes from the idea that Clerks 3 was just announced this last couple weeks. Randall from Clerks getting his own movie. Just seeing him walk around being an a-hole and like not getting along with anyone and thinking that he is like the king shit that he thinks he is. And by the end of the movie, he changes his whole perspective or learns something. But it'd be fun to kind of see that.
You really want to watch a whole movie of him explaining how the Star Wars was broke?
Explain how everything was broke. I would like to see that.
Okay.
All right. Like, this is what's wrong with the Marvel Universe. This is, and then going off about how DC was great or something like that. It would be funny.
What about you, Trey? Anything else that you would like to see?
I mean, I really thought Robin in the Lego Batman movie, I thought that version of Robin was hysterical. And I would totally watch another Lego movie with just Robin doing a whole bunch of weird shit.
Would you really?
Yeah, I would. Because that version of Robin in that movie was so funny because it was so off the wall. Bonkers. It was so good.
I really want one, but I'd have to have a time machine to do it the way I wanted to do it. But I would love a Doc Holliday movie, but I want Val Kilmer's Doc Holliday, and that's the problem. You know, it's too far gone from there. But that would be like a dream. That was always a dream of mine, to have a Val Kilmer Doc Holliday spinoff where we get to see him in his prime or something. I thought that could have been amazing.
That'd be pretty great. Although, you know, having Dennis Quaid's Doc Holliday wouldn't be a bad idea either.
No, he was a good doc, but I don't think he came close to Val Kilmer. Val Kilmer just played him so uniquely.
Oh, it was his own character at that point. Yeah.
100%. Yeah. 100%. So I'll give you one that could be done, right? Just you find a different actor. I want Murdoch from the A-Team. I want a Murdoch from the A-Team. He's unpredictable, he's certifiable, but he's honorable, resourceful. I would watch him venture off and see what kind of trouble he'd get into as he wrestles with his own demons. I think that'd be great.
Open every single episode with him breaking out of a different mental institution.
Or every movie. I mean, I would go movie, but yeah. Yeah, fine.
Yeah. That'd be great. I do like that. Bronn from Game of Thrones getting his own series where he's a traveling sellsword.
That would be really interesting.
That could work.
That show has so many characters that really could carry their own show. I mean, Arya obviously is the one I think most people would jump to right away. You know, who doesn't want to see West of Westeros, right? Still.
Right.
But that's a great character that I totally could see that. I mean, he was just so fun all the time.
Yeah, the way he would just like, he was almost the voice of the audience sometimes when he'd come in and be like, what the hell are you people doing?
That'd be great. Or you could get a Cersei. Nope. Maybe a Dan.
Nope. 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 Mm. a Sam movie or Sam show?
Jorah? Nope.
No.
Just uncomfortable.
You could also do, I can't remember if she died or not, because there was a whole paradox dimension thing, but Rose Tyler from Doctor Who.
She lived.
Yeah, she did live. And she was, I believe she was trapped in an alternate universe.
Yeah, she is.
So,
like, where she got her own doctor too.
Yeah. So, is, you know, now that we have the female doctor era, could Rose get out of that alternate universe, come back, and become a doctor herself? Like, that would be interesting.
Do you guys wish that show had more spinoffs and that it wasn't just Doctor Who? Like, they would actually do different things.
They've actually had a 3 or 4 different spinoffs. There's the Sarah Jane Chronicles, which is the Sarah Jane companion. When the actual actress got her own show and there was stuff from Doctor Who constantly in it. What was the other spinoff?
It's like the Tomorrow Keepers or something.
There's that one. And there's also Torchwood.
Torchwood that's what I'm thinking of, is Torchwood.
Yeah. Torchwood is another great spinoff that has a lot of great characters. And it was taking Doctor Who in a much more adult way.
And it was Class too, wasn't there? Does that one sound familiar?
Yeah, there was another, and there's also a superhero one that was a spinoff where they had their own superheroes, but I don't remember the name of it for sure. But Doctor Who has had a lot of different spinoffs, and they've been successful in their own different ways. It's kind of hard to tell with a lot of the English shows because they just do however many seasons they feel like, and they're like, all right, we're done, we're out, with the exception of like Doctor Who, which they keep on rebooting every so many years.
I had a weird, wild idea because I love the show 227. Did you guys ever watch that with Marla Gibbs, 227?
Yeah.
I would love a Tiffany Haddish, Sandra Clark movie or TV show, which is Jackie's character, Jack A.A.'s character, just brought back to life, but with Tiffany Haddish doing it. I don't know why, but I thought of her when I was thinking about it. I'm like, because she could put her own spin on it. And I always love that character. And I know she's really kind of a spin on the actress herself, but I would totally watch that. I would love to see that.
That does sound like a lot of fun. One of the ones I thought of was Hermione after school, after leaving Hogwarts. What would happen?
Well,
to
she
her
was
life?
More interesting than Harry Potter anyway.
Yeah, well, she was always saving Harry Potter's life and everybody else's life in the process. So yeah, she was always the one who
chosen
had all
one
the skill.
My ass.
Chosen one to have the right
exactly.
friends.
You were chosen to be friends with Hermione because she's going to save you every single time. Thankfully, you do something in the final movie, but up until then, it's really her.
And the one time she screws up, no one lets yep. her forget about it.
What about Arthur from The Tick? Would that work as its own movie?
No, Arthur needs to play off of something like The Tick to work. Like, as much as Arthur is a good character and The Tick a good character, they only work together because The Tick is so... it's just so much of a cartoon character and so overboard that you need somebody like Arthur to balance him out. So without him, Arthur's just kind of boring.
Yeah, because it's like a Holmes and Watson kind of relationship that they have.
Right. Because like as much as Sherlock's interesting and Watson's interesting, they're interesting the most mm-hmm. together. When they're separate, it's not really that great.
Yeah, and Arthur's that same way in The Tick.
Yeah, because Sherlock's too much. Watson's not enough. Yeah.
Right.
I would love, I've always wanted this since the show went off the air. I would still love Willow from Buffy the Vampire Slayer to get her own show or movie or whatever. I still would. I still would love to see that with Allison Hannigan.
Return to Sunnydale?
No, just do her own thing.
She rebuilds the town.
I always liked her more than Buffy anyway. And I just found her kind of growth through that show to be fascinating. And really, she's kind of just Wanda. Right? She's just Scarlet Witch. So let's get that.
It's true.
In a lot of ways, yeah.
I want that. There's Warner Brothers' own version of the Scarlet Witch. Bam. Take that, Marvel. Throw her in DC somehow.
You Garth from Wayne's World?
No.
No. Yeah, it's the same problem, but without Wayne, it doesn't work.
Not even if it was like Garth lost in New York or something.
Why do you want a Garth movie so bad? That's what I want to know. Because were they really that captivating that you needed just one of them for a whole movie? Like, two of them's too much. I need just the one.
I just miss Dana
Carvey. He just really wants to see that Scooby-Doo ending.
I do.
What's Tia Carrera up to these days? Anything? No? Okay.
I was about to say something really bad.
All right. Well, let's go into any listener comments you want to mention. I can throw out one from Matt Barnes. And I do want to mention Andreas. He mentioned Furiosa. Can you call her a sidekick in Mad Max Fury Road? He wanted to ask that real quick. Or because
it's almost her right. movie, so I think
that's the question.
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's hard to say because it's like it's in that movie. Mad Max is the supporting character, even though it's him in the headline. It's really mostly her story. We're just seeing it through Max's eyes. So it's interesting that he asked that question, and it's one of those things that just takes the status quo of movies and characters and puts it on its edge a little bit. But yeah, it's hard to say. I would say that she's more the main character than anything else.
And so she's getting a spinoff, her own movie, sidekick, I guess, or whatever. It's getting her own movie. And it's not even played by Charlize Theron. That's the sad part.
That's some garbage.
Anya Taylor-Joy is going to play it. But you don't think so?
She's great and awesome, but she can't do it.
Ooh, put that on the cover when the movie comes out. Put that on the poster when it comes out. All right, well, Matt Barnes says, I love sidekicks in movies because a sidekick is essentially the backup quarterback on a football team. And everybody loves the backup quarterback. He's handsome, always looks like he's ready to play, holds a clipboard like a champ, and seldom knows where his helmet is because he knows his number is never going to be called. But then one day, his number is called. He finds his helmet, and rushes onto the field. He's finally number one, and 9 times out of 10, he ends up playing like number two, if you know what I mean.
Blow the whistle! Blow the whistle! Necessary reference.
I know there are Packer fans on the podcast. You have Batman as your quarterback. You don't want Robin going in the game. I know there are Bears fans on the podcast. You've only ever had sidekicks as quarterbacks. I know this because they've all stunk. So when it comes to movies, I like my sidekicks to remain sidekicks. They bring a lot to the story in that capacity, and they are often the character that acts as a conduit for the audience, as they're typically the character we can relate to the most. But in the spirit of the question, if I had to choose one to get their number called, I'd have to pick Watson from the world of Sherlock Holmes. It would be fun to see him solving a mystery, applying the tools he learned from years of observing Holmes in action. I think we just told you no.
Yeah, I mean,
we kind of did.
I like his rationale. Learning from Sherlock and going off on his own. Martin Freeman would make that fun.
It would be a coming-of-age story in a way.
There you go. Troy?
Let's see. Paula said, oh my gosh, I'd watch a spinoff of all of the Leverage peeps. Elliot kicking ass and flipping his hair. Or Parker and her confident snark breaking into places. Ooh, can't forget Hardison with that sweet smile and sweet IT moves. Bring it on.
I
would agree. I would totally watch
Parker. I would watch Parker or Hardison. I do like them best together because they play off each other, though.
Yeah.
Stima says, sidekicks are awesome. They're essentially the sous chefs of their perspective franchises. They do just as much work, but the main attraction always gets the glory. I'd love to see a Whistler prequel series from Blade canon.
I could watch that.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Whistler Vampire Hunter? I'm down for that.
That would be fun. All right.
Who would you have play Whistler at this point?
Wow, Chris Christopherson is too old. Idris Elba.
Yeah, all right.
Grizzled, kind of rough around the edges, no bullshit. Idris Elba.
Yeah, I'm behind you on that one.
That's it for our topic, sidekicks. Now we're going to go to our upcoming releases and any recommendations. So what's coming out in the world of movies and TV?
All right, on July 30th, we have The Jungle Cruise, based on Disneyland's theme park ride, where a small riverboat takes a group of travelers through the jungle filled of dangerous animals, reptiles, but with a supernatural element. This stars Dwayne Johnson, Emily Blunt, and Edgar Ramirez.
Quick question on that one. Are you guys excited for Jungle Cruise? Because it looks African Queen meets Jungle Book, or not Jungle Book.
Jewel of the Nile, Romance of the Stone.
Pirates.
I think it'll be fun.
I think it'd be a lot of fun. I don't know about excited, but I know it's a good time on the screen.
Okay. Just checking. Also coming out, same date, July 30th, in the theaters, The Green Knight, unless you're in the UK. Sorry, guys. An epic fantasy adventure based on the timeless Arthurian legend, The Green Knight tells the story of Sir Gawain, played by Dev Patel, King Arthur's reckless and headstrong nephew who embarks on a daring quest to confront the eponymous Green Knight, a gigantic emerald skin stranger and tester of men. Gawain contends with ghosts, giants, thieves, and schemers, and what comes a deeper journey to define his character and prove his worth in the eyes of his family and kingdom by facing the ultimate challenger, getting fantastic reviews.
And then we have Stillwater also coming out this weekend. So AMC A-list people, you're getting your money's worth this week. We're going to have the unemployed roughneck Bill Baker, played by Matt Damon, traveling from Oklahoma to France to visit his estranged daughter, Allison, played by Abigail Breslin, who is imprisoned for a murder she claims she did not commit. This is loosely based on the Amanda Knox saga, for those fans of that story. It is written and directed by Spotlight's own Tom McCarthy.
Looks great. Looks great. And lastly, The Suicide Squad in theaters and on HBO Max, but go see it in theaters on August 6th. I'm mentioning it now because, you know, we got the anniversary episode next week. But really, what's there to say? It's Suicide Squad. It's a soft reboot. It's not quite a sequel yet. Margot Robbie is back as Harley Quinn. You have Jai Courtney back as Jai Courtney. And you have new members of the team. And there's Polka Dot Man. And Idris Elba is in the cast, which is fantastic. And James Gunn wrote and directed this bad boy. It's rated R. It's supposed to be really, really R. And also, don't get too attached to characters. That's one thing I've heard by multiple people. So that sounds interesting. Okay. Recent film or TV recommendations we haven't previously talked about. Before we get to our game of the week, What have you guys been watching on the old movies and television that we haven't already talked about or don't already talk about weekly?
Well, if you haven't gotten hit upside the head with it at this point in time, Ted Lasso season 2 dropped over on Apple TV. It's going to be week to week. And I rewatched season 1 and it's just as joyous as it was during the pandemic, because apparently the pandemic is over, but according to the CDC, it's not. So
it's
the second season just picks up after the events of the end of the first season. So if you have Apple TV Plus, watch it. And if you don't have Apple TV Plus, wait about 6 or 7 weeks and then drop it for the free trial, so you can watch both seasons all at once. And because I have Apple TV Plus, I also started Mythic Quest season 2, which is fantastic.
I keep meaning to watch it.
If you haven't seen Mythic Quest and you're a gamer, definitely check out Mythic Quest as well. It's hysterical. It's so funny. I never thought it would be as funny as it is, but it's really funny.
So last week I sat down and got caught up on a show called The Watch. It's on BBC America, and it is loosely based off of characters created by Terry Pratchett. And that show is a lot of fun. It's whimsical and interesting, and it's about these cops in a how do they put it in the show, in a parallel-ish dimension to ours, and every single one of the cops has their own little problems and quirks to them, and it's just fascinating and enjoyable to watch. So yeah, I would highly recommend The Watch.
I'll check that out. I've been watching, I mean, because somebody gave me an Apple login, so I've been watching a bunch of Apple shows. And I did watch Ted Lasso season 2 premiere. Great. Still holds up, so that's good to know. But also a show called Home Before Dark. Have you guys heard of this at all?
No.
It's an Apple?
Yeah, it's an Apple show.
Oh, I've not even seen it come across on the banners.
It's great. I was pleasantly surprised. It's about this little 9-year-old girl who's a journalist, and her dad's also a journalist. So she's very similar to her dad in that respect. Her dad and her family moved back to his old small town, where essentially back in his youth, his best friend was kidnapped. And they never really, I mean, the person was caught, but her dad never really believed it was the right person. Well, this little girl goes on this journey to try to find the real killer, because she thinks someone else was killed in town because of this situation. Her name's Hildy Lisko. She's played by Brooklyn Prince. This little girl, I normally don't like shows where there's kids involved, because typically you're going to get a whole lot of, oh, mom, and a bunch of pouty things. No, this kid is like an adult. She's basically a 9-year-old Veronica Mars. And she's sassy, she's fun, she's very astute, she's very smart, she's sharp, she is like a little 32-year-old woman. I mean, she is not a 9-year-old kid. She's a great performance, like it's really impressive. And the mystery is interesting. And Jim Sturgess is in it as Matt Lisko, her father. I mean, there's a fun little cast note that Joelle Carter is in this with Abby Miller, and both of them were in Justified. So that's just a fun find for me. But I really, really enjoy the show. It's a fun mystery. It's smart and it keeps moving forward. On Apple, Home Before Dark. All right. Well, share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group. We're on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. Our site is thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can rate and subscribe us on your preferred podcast app. You can always find John's artwork on Insta and Twitter at @RJohnDraws. Amanda on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirkin at Sink Into This. Troy at Troy Heinrichs, and on The Blacklist Exposed with me as well. And presenting Hitchcock, I am on, and my Twitter is at Aaron Smirks. Before we head out, though, we got a game. We haven't done this in a while. We were hoping Amanda would be here because her laugh really makes this game work. Now it's just going to be very uncomfortable. So we're going to play Movie Innuendo. In honor of Jungle Cruise, pick any two innocent lines from either the African Queen, the Mummy, or a Pirates of the Caribbean movie, and deliver it as innuendo. Troy, you can go first. What is your first line? And name the movie and then the line.
All right. I added a little bit to this from the actual line.
Well, you can't change the line. That's the whole point of the game.
Well, the line is the line's the line.
Okay.
But it needs a preamble to set it up.
Okay.
So
that sounds terrible. That
sounds like you're breaking the rules already. I don't like this. You got me on edge.
I had to play the Amanda card.
Amanda would just do the line. I'm just telling you. She follows the rules.
From the Mummy, patience is a virtue.
Nothing get tickled in my dullards there.
That's because I was going to start it with my pet. Patience is a virtue.
Was that in the line? Well, you can't do that.
I know.
Well, yeah. See,
Now, I guess you could almost get away with doing the there's a response to that line that makes it work as an innuendo. I just forget what the response is.
So far, banger job, guys. Banger job.
Yeah. So, you know what? Because you did The Mummy, I'm going to go ahead and I picked one from the Mummy as well. So here we go. Know this. This creature is the bringer of death. He will never eat. He will never sleep. And he will never stop.
Do you guys know what innuendo is? I want to be clear.
Yeah, but maybe the creature's in my pants.
The bringer of death. Like, it starts off very morbid. I mean, I guess if you're into that stuff, right? I don't want to judge. I'm not judging.
Hey, look, everyone's got their kink, man.
Okay. Well, I picked one from The African Queen. And Charlie says this. Can you make a torpedo? Well, do so, Mr. Allnut. He tried not to laugh. You can't not do it. You can't. Mr. Allnut is actually a character's name. What? All right, Troy, back to you. Let's see if you learn how to play the game yet.
All right. So this one's also from The Mummy. You always had more balls than brains.
Still not innuendo. It's an insult.
All right. So this one's from African Queen. Are you cracked? The currents down there are fierce.
There we go.
I don't want a drowned woman on my hands. What will you be thinking of next?
You see, you had it and you kept going.
You should have stopped when you had the win.
We were like ready to applaud, and then you're like,
I went with the whole line. You know, the whole line is supposed to be pretty, like, important, but yeah, I should have just stopped with, are you cracked? The currents down there are fierce, and then stopped. You're right. I win, though. So
I still have one more to go. Also, the African Queen, Rose says, I never dreamed any mere physical experience could be so stimulating.
No, John wins.
He doesn't, because he went on. If John would have stopped, John would have won. John cost himself. That's what I'm saying. I'm sorry, he lost it. That's my vote.
You know what? We're going to take it to the crowd.
I don't think any of them want to vote. Because I feel like we all three just sucked. That's what I think.
You're the one that picked the worst movies to pick from.
You're the one that just didn't read the rule book. Captain, I'm going to add some words to it.
Also, he doesn't know what an innuendo is.
I do not.
That would be helpful. See, Troy, what an innuendo is basically if you say something and you're alluding to physical interaction where, I don't know if your mom ever told you this, but if you take the torpedo and it goes through the hole, babies come out.
Just like that?
I'm just processing for the first time.
Wait a minute.
My mind is blown.
What just happened? What?
But there are so many choices down there.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, that's it. Remember, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn. Jesus. No, you need Jesus.